Welcome back to EV News Daily. Coming up today, Audi finally unveils the Q6 e-tron. We'll talk Mercedes AMG EV has been spotted and some EV lease deals. Plus, stay tuned because later in the show, I'll tell you what Donald Trump said last weekend about EVs being made in Mexico. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information. For today, Wednesday, 20th of March, I'm Martin Lee, and it's my job to go through every EV story I can find, hundreds of articles and links and feeds sometimes a day to whittle it down to just what you need to know to save you time. We go live at 5 p.m. UK, and Patreon supporters get the episodes as soon as they're ready and ad-free. Be like them by clicking on a link in the show notes. Well, we love a car reveal day, don't we? And we certainly got one with the unveiling of the Audi Q6 and SQ6 on the next generation PPE platform, which we know a little bit about because it's the sibling car to the Porsche Macan. We'll get this out of the way. First of all, this car has been massively delayed, but I think it's well worth waiting for because it's got some amazing specs. I think it moves EVs forward in some respects, and I'll tell you why. Because Audi's introduced the 2025, as the model year will be, Q6 and SQ6 e-trons, the first Audis built on Volkswagen Group's premium platform electric. We'll call it PPE. And it'll be the first to be manufactured at the Audi plant there in Ingolstadt in Germany. And the Q6 series will directly compete in the electric luxury SUV space. And it's got some fantastic competition. The likes of the Cadillac Lyriq, the Genesis Electric GV70 and more as well. This vehicle, and for my YouTube viewers, I'll pop it on screen right now, is positioned between the Q4 e-tron, which is their version of maybe an ID4, but it's a very nice car, the Q4 e-tron, and the Q8 e-tron, which is the new name for the old, just e-tron. So that's where we go with the even numbers in the Audi lineup. This is the Q6 e-tron, going to be a very, very popular car for many segments, offering ample space, 114.1 inch or 290 centimeter wheelbase, generous rear legroom, cargo capacity in the back is 19 cubic feet or 540 liters behind the rear seats, going up to 54 cubic feet or 1500 liters if you fold the back seats down. A small front trunk is in there as well, another 2 cubic feet or 56.6 liters of storage. We'd seen some shots of the outside in camouflage, and test drives were done last year with some journalists, so we knew a little bit about what the exterior would be like, but it was one of those ones where the interior was completely covered up with the black cloth, and now we get to see inside the interior with lots of sustainable materials, but a new dashboard layout for Audis with two OLED displays, an 11.9 inch gauge cluster, and a 14.5 inch center touchscreen. And if you want it, the passenger getting a 10.9 inch touchscreen in front of them. Technology inside with a head up display with augmented reality navigation, dynamic ambient lighting, an 830 watt Bang & Olufsen sound system, and of course the inevitable over-the-air updates to make the vehicles better the longer you own them. Possibly some debate there over the interior. I'll pop a picture on screen for our YouTube viewers. It looks fantastic. The materials look wonderful. The design is very Audi. I think this would be a lovely place to spend lots of hours. There aren't many buttons, and that is a trend, not just in EVs, but automotive is heading all of that way. But still, if you're like a more of a kind of a tactile experience, not too many things to play with and twiddle, but a lot of it moved to the touchscreen. There is a load of ADAS, the advanced driver assistance systems, everything that you can imagine would be on a premium vehicle, all the different collision avoidance and lane keep and self-driving stuff. And the adaptive driving assistant is an optional feature utilizing even more vehicle sensors, high-res maps and cloud data for enhanced navigation support as well. So I think they are moving this on. Let's talk about the engineering behind it, though, because I think this is where some of the source is. Let's talk about the motors they've created for this and the power and how they're going to get the efficiency out of this as well, because let's address the elephant in the room. The original e-tron and even the Q8, not the most efficient vehicles in the world. So let's talk about some of the power options and some of the engineering underneath it as well. Now, the initial US lineup will have dual motors. So, of course, Audi Quattro all-wheel drive, unsurprising, they'll come with that. Dual motor version coming first, 422 horsepower or 446 horsepower with boost mode. And on the SQ6, 510 horsepower with boost mode. Both models accelerating 0 to 60 miles an hour in less than 5 seconds. SQ probably around 4 seconds, they say. A lithium-ion battery pack of 100 kilowatt hours. That is 94.9 kilowatt hours usable. There'll be an alternative 83 kilowatt hour battery in some markets. The design uses either 12 modules for the 94.9 kilowatt hour usable one, or 10 modules for the smaller battery to ensure balanced weight distribution, they say. So let's talk about the architecture of this. It's an 800 volt architecture for fast charging. These models can charge at rates of up to 270 kilowatts. I suspect there might even be some lowballing going on with this, because we've seen those early Porsche Macan cars, engineering-wise very similar, exceeding 270. But let's say 270 for now, and I think Audi are setting our expectations a little bit lower and they will exceed them. Either way, they say 270 kilowatt DC fast charging, 150 miles of range added in 10 minutes, and a full charge to 80%. They've given us 10 to 80. Thank you, Audi. All we want is 10 to 80. There's nothing worse than car makers being like, oh, the 20 to 70 number, to try and, you know, juice it a little bit. No, the 10 to 80 number, which is the one we always want, 10% to 80%, 21 minutes. That is right up there with the other, you know, equally good high voltage architectures. And even, you know, it doesn't have to be an 800 volt architecture. This isn't, it's not like the golden bullet, as it were. It doesn't fix everything, and you can get some very, very, very good low voltage architectures. Tesla is one of those as well. But either way, this will do 21 minutes to get at 80% at a compatible station. We cannot wait to see the charge curve on this. It will also have something that they've called bank charging, which we've seen others do as well, which is to effectively take an 800 volt battery pack, the traction battery, and divide it in two to 400 volt batteries, two of them. And so if you are turning up at a DC fast charger that can't support high voltage charging, and this is a way of taking that 800 volt pack, splitting it in two, and charging them in two halves to reach an identical charge level. So you balance them first, then you continue to charge them simultaneously. That enhances efficiency. They've revised the battery cell chemistry as well to support this charging capability, adjusting the ratio of nickel, cobalt, and manganese in the cells to an 8-1-1 ratio, optimizing charging performance and reducing the environmental impact by lowering the cobalt usage, they say. The battery's thermal management system is highlighted as a key innovation on the PPE platform. To condition the battery, it's always going to be around 25 degrees Celsius. Audi said yesterday that is the optimal operating temperature for the high performance they want and battery longevity as well. Let's take a look at the thermal cooling system as well, because Audi very proud of this. A new predictive thermal management system adjusting the battery's temperature in anticipation of charging needs based on the driver's route, the departure times, and historical usage patterns as well, ensuring the battery is always at an ideal temperature for charging upon arrival at a station. Now, Audi will distinguish the Q6 and the SQ6 from the sibling Porsche Macan by opting for different motor configurations. They've omitted rear wheel steering, for instance. It emphasizes a rear wheel bias in the all-wheel drive system, and Audi have made it their own. Something I talked about recently on this podcast, the pricing that's been coming out has been significantly under the starting price of the Porsche Macan, and I'd seen that reporting, I'd passed that reporting on to you, and now we can see they are, in terms of engineering, making different decisions to bring this in at least an entry point. And of course, you can spec this up to performance versions and adding more motors, but a lower price point than getting into the base Macan. Regen braking is something we should talk about, because these motors are really, really special. So the regen braking is a two-step process in the Audi Q6 e-tron. Initially, when you start to engage regen, so you let off the accelerator, it will utilize the rear motor and it integrates the front motor and then the brake pads, the friction brakes, as necessary, they say. But by having both motors working together, fully aligned with the friction brakes, enables 95% of braking to be achieved in their testing with no physical use of the brake pads. Regen power on these motors, 220 kilowatts. 220 kilowatts of regen power alone. That's really, really good, isn't it? And that's going to bring you to a stop only very quickly and recovering loads of energy. But you'll barely need to touch the brake pedal. The key is, and I always say this, the key is how that is integrated with software. And so all those little fine little details, like, you know, when you charge it to 100% before a long journey, and you jump in the car, you're kind of on autopilot, you get in the car, you drive out your driveway, you get to the end of the road, you've got to make a turn, you let off the you know, the throttle, and you expect the car to slow down. A really well-designed EV will use friction brakes rather than just go, well, my battery's full, so I can't do regen. You're going to, you know, you better wake up. Those little details, and I suspect this does obviously have wonderful implementations of regen, I suspect, have to try it. All those little details make the difference, but this sounds so, so good already. Audi's new multi-source heat pump uses all of the external air and powertrain waste heat for better thermal management, they say, heating and cooling the cabin and maintaining optimal battery temperature to extend the range. Anything from minus 10 degrees Celsius to about plus 20, this is in its real sweet spot, they say. And the engineering behind this, I'm on the platform itself, you can probably tell I'm a little bit excited about how this moves, not just EVs forward, but you know, Volkswagen Group and Audi and Porsche and things to be proud of that they're doing, not necessarily that have never been done before, but bringing it all together in a package and a brand like Audi that I think is going to exceed so many expectations. I'm really excited about this vehicle. I think it looks so cool. We'll finish off with a quick mention for some of the exterior features and some of the tech now that I've gone through the engineering of it. Let's talk Audi lighting, because they're really proud of this. It has an innovative front LED lighting technology that features 61 individual segments for customizable DRLs, daytime running graphics. So if you want to design your own daytime running lights, you can do. How cool is that? But this new technology also enhances visibility and safety, of course. Up front, these new lights look like they are going to be so much fun for you to play with, for you to customize. But also when you see them, it's going to be so distinctively this new Audi technology. Up front, it looks cool. Out the back, the rear lights use OLED technology with three panels, each containing 60 segments. And the rear lights as well can display various lighting graphics to alert other drivers to perhaps a hazard in the road, or even the use of the car's semi-autonomous modes in the future. With more autonomy, we are going to need to have better ways of knowing which cars perhaps might be on their level 3 self-driving technology, or which cars might be driving themselves, actually. And so you can pay attention to that. And this is, I guess, one implementation that we could do with that. Inside, it runs Android, an Android-based operating system. Very streamlined, very user-friendly, they say. And I can attest to that. I use Android in the Polestar. And if it is a similar kind of integration, a deep level integration into the BMS and the navigation using Google Maps and things like that, it works absolutely faultlessly. Let me know what you think about these two new vehicles, the engineering underneath them, what they've done with them, the styling, and where it fits in, and where Audi fits in with the rest of EV world. I'd love to hear from you. Leave a comment on the YouTube show. You can send me an email anytime. hello@evnewsdaily.com. Let's talk a little bit about Jaguar Land Rover, one of those companies that I suspect we're going to get a bit of a flood of EV announcements from over the next year or so. Jaguar Land Rover is hiring 250 new electrical engineers to support their development of EVs, including the Range Rover, which comes out this year. The new Range Rover Velar looks a little bit special, actually. That's the first one that's coming. Part of a wider recruitment drive backed by JLR's £15 billion reimagined strategy. The new hires based in the UK at Gaydon. That's the engineering centre, and Whiteley Future Energy Lab, where 40 roles are being created. As many people say, the Jaguar Land Rover are playing catch up. The I-Pace was a very, very special, and is still a very special vehicle, but has not had as many updates as it could have done, and a little bit unloved. Their new plan is finally materializing, and these new roles are going to be working within JLR on things like battery storage, battery cell design, cell stack assemblies, and software systems for integration as well. Okay, moving on, we'll talk about BMW next, and they're teasing the Neue X concept, a date for your diary. It's not long to wait, it's tomorrow. We see an image which is very much an SUV category outline they've shown, hinting at the Neue X's silhouette, suggesting a more more conventional proportion compared to the Neue-Klasse's sedan. Final details we'll get to see tomorrow. We've seen this many times in recent years, especially with electric vehicles, that concept cars tend to make their way to being production cars with not too many changes compared to the old sort of combustion world of showing off a crazy concept. And even prototypes would change a lot. But in EV world, things have been pretty true to the early versions we've seen. So tomorrow we'll see the new design from BMW, and I will bring you more of that on this podcast. Now we'll talk fellow German premium car maker Mercedes. Mercedes AMG actually preparing for the launch of their electric vehicle. Currently undergoing winter testing in Sweden. Some official images have been provided. Not spy shots, but so they've got camouflage on. The next generation Mercedes AMG EV. We've been given a hint of it by the Vision AMG concept. We'll use their AMG.EA platform. Now, we talk about concept cars that eventually make their way through to being production cars. If this concept has any bearance on what ends up on the road, it's going to look really, really special. Picture on screen for our YouTube viewers. Remember, if you listen to the audio version of this podcast, it's back on YouTube now. And if you've got the option of just doing the audio version or adding some pictures as well, if you want to, this platform, AMG.EA platform, in the early stages of testing, the first winter tests have been done in the Arctic Circle at minus 25 degrees. That's minus 13 degrees Fahrenheit. It's going to feature, they say, axial flux motors with a mix of power density. Very, very compact motors, but lightweight design as well, on a high voltage platform for lots of power. Specific details remain sparse right now, but the electric version of the Mercedes AMG, we think, is going to be high performance, high horsepower, and a big GT four-door thing arriving sometime. Well, maybe it's a year away, but it's an exciting vehicle to be talking about. Next up, let's try and get our heads around some of the statements coming out of the oil companies, because a few years ago they seemed to be all in on, or at least investing in renewables, which in many cases, whether that was buying a charging network here or there, was merely a rounding error on their total budget, such as the money in oil companies. I could never work out whether those investments were cynical or a bet on the future. Shell is one of those companies that made those investments and then has recently started to walk back their talk about environment and things like that. We'll see how we go. There's a bit of money left in carbons and stuff like that. But Shell will sell off 500 of its retail sites each year in 2024 and 2025 as they transition, they say, to meet the demand for electric vehicle forecourt solutions. The divestment part of their broader strategy to adapt their retail operations. They will move the focus to enhancing things in the EV charging facility space and convenience stores for customers. The company has a target to grow their public EV charging station network up to 2030. They want 200,000 chargers in their network from 54,000 right now. We're talking over here in Europe at the moment. A significant proportion of the new charging infrastructure will be developed in European regions. Shell's move into the EV charging market is expected to be profitable for them, and so I don't see why they would pull back on that investment. But this announcement coincides with Shell recently revising their energy transition strategy, softening some of their carbon emissions reductions goals, which some would say were ambitious and maybe not realistic, but we'll wait and see. Understandably, I am naturally cynical from any company that makes a lot of money in the oil industry, but as I've said a million times before, these companies are very good at making money. And if the money to be made is in renewables and EVs and charging, well, then that's what they'll do, because they'll carry on being very good at making money. But we'll keep an eye on stories like this. Next up, a quick public service announcement for any of my listeners or viewers in the area. Minnesota residents can now receive a rebate of $2,500 for purchasing a new electric vehicle and $600 for buying a used EV. Eligibility criteria stipulate an MSRP of $55,000 or below for new EVs and used $25,000 or less. The rebate program opened applications a couple of weeks ago following some legislative efforts to address climate change. Funding for the program is $10.6 million for the current year, and you can now start to apply for that. It'll be at $10,000 off a new EV by the time you factor in federal tax credit as well, any EVs that are eligible for that. And you know, you come back to a vehicle like the Tesla Model Y, which as we approach the end of the month and the end of the quarter right now, there are some inventory Model Ys available now. Long range, not just rear wheel drive. Long range, so you know, 300 miles, loads of performance, loads of space. Say what you will about the Tesla Model Y, I think that's a very, very compelling vehicle at many price points. But effectively, 35 grand in your driveway, well, for anyone this rebate applies to, that'd be £32,500 for an inventory Model Y before the end of the quarter. I mean, okay, so did Tesla have some stock, and there are some issues around their Q1 numbers, which are going to be a bit stinky by all accounts. But that's a fantastic vehicle at that price point. The whole, you know, this was a $50,000 vehicle 12 months ago. Anyway, that's my recommendation if you're in the area and you want a very good value EV. Some battery news next, and one of the big battery plants in the United States has a small speed bump to get over by the look of it. Gotion, the Chinese company, is filing a lawsuit against the Michigan township in the area. They're building the factory over a dispute. Now, work has begun on the factory. They've purchased the land and it's being cleared already of the trees. And the Chinese EV battery maker Gotion has now initiated legal action against the township in Michigan called Green Township over alleged breaches of contract for their $2.4 billion battery factory development. The lawsuit accuses the township of doing a U-turn and now retracting the commitments after a change in the board's composition, which happened at the end of last year. And those people who ended up on the new board were against the project. And central to the dispute is the construction of essential water infrastructure, which is anticipated to make 2,500 jobs in what is a, you know, a rural community, and a big Chinese battery company coming in and making 2,500 high-tech, well-paid jobs in that area. It would massively change the economy locally. Here's an interesting data point I thought was interesting. The fallout over the water supply, the factory operations require 715,000 gallons. That's 2.7 million litres of water flowing through it. This article says per day. Now, I found multiple articles on this. I found one from Fox News that was particularly anti-Chinese. This one from the fantastic publication Automotive News. And that's an enormous number for water usage per day. So I'm going to go away and do some more research on this. But I'm not surprised that a few local people have gone, hey, hang on a minute. That's a big deal. But just, I guess, one of countless data points in terms of what needs to be done to build these huge facilities, despite the economic benefits that I'm sure in this case will probably transform that rural area, the impact they have on the environment as well. So you may have seen some headlines recently about Europe having a second look at Chinese cars coming in, and you have definitely heard more about the USA having a look at Chinese cars. Well, BYD, well, not being put off. The Chinese automaker BYD is expanding their global presence. And if they say Europe and the US isn't ready, that's okay. We will continue our rapid sales growth in other parts of the world to circumvent these geopolitical tensions and trade barriers. BYD is now setting up manufacturing plants in regions that are more receptive to them, including Thailand, Brazil, Indonesia, Hungary, and even Uzbekistan. Now, the company's first international factory commences operations in Thailand by the end of the year. BYD recently outpacing the likes of Toyota for passenger car sales in Thailand. So a market that they are moving into, and these Chinese companies like BYD and the rest are not being put off if Europe and the USA are saying, at least for now, we're not sure about your vehicles coming in. They're saying, right, it's a big market out there, and they're not slowing down. Well, Tesla is expanding their charging access to non-Tesla EVs in China. So far, they've made over 800 of their charging stations in China accessible to other EV brands. That is 450 superchargers and 350 destination chargers. An offer allowing EV owners to subscribe to Tesla's charging services at a reduced rate from now until the end of April is in effect, building on their integration of Tesla's charging network with other EV brands on the Chinese mainland. I think NIO get access. Polestar certainly do have access to their charging stations. They opened up about 10 of them at the end of last year. There's about 30 or 40 models from other manufacturers that can access the superchargers and destination chargers in mainland China. And since the end of last year, that number has been increasing and is heading towards 1,000. So not just here and in the US, where Tesla are embracing that open supercharger network. Now, I don't like doing too many finance offers and lease deals. This is a global podcast. I can see from my stats, I've got listeners all around the world, mostly Europe and the US, to be fair, a bit of Aussie and stuff, and some countries in Asia. But this is difficult to then try and localize any particular deals. But I did find one that came across my desk today, and I thought, I've got to talk about that because I think they've got something wrong here. And I just want to have a look at this one specific deal, not to recommend that you go and do this deal, but just to kind of talk about it, really. Well, the lease offer is for Rivian. This is for a Rivian R1S. So we're looking at the SUV and we're looking at the quad motor. This coming from carsdirect.com, where I found this. It's $700 a month for 3 years, or $699 over 36 months, and a down payment of $8,500. And that's that a rate applies to the R1S in the Adventure version, large battery pack. That's a $101,000 vehicle, by the way. Now, I'm not an expert on leasing because we buy our vehicles nearly always secondhand as well, because that's just the way that we do our cars. But this is an interesting conversation starter about depreciation and how comfortable you feel owning an EV, because I've made some money on EVs, and my last EV, the Hyundai Kona that we sold after a year, I lost about £1,000 a month on. Still stinks. Anyway, with 835 horsepower, the quad motor version of the Rivian R1S is so much more powerful than the dual motor 533 horsepower. Range goes from 270 miles to 321 miles. And if you calculate the lease cost without taxes and any additional fees, it's about $938 per month for this, which, again, I'm not pretending is not a huge amount of money, but it's only a little more than the dual motor version, which is $876 a month. So for less than $1,000 a month, you get one of the finest electric vehicles on sale anywhere in the world. Packed with technology, one of the most powerful, enormously competent, and the quad motor retails at $24,000 more than the dual motor, and it costs you $62 a month more. But that's kind of where we start comparing it to other cars, like the Tesla Model X dual motor, which has a much higher lease payment of $1,400 a month with the down payment and it all combined and divided by 36 payments. And so this is two-thirds of the price of a Tesla Model X and yet retails for more. So here's my question. How comfortable are you with owning versus leasing an EV? Because this is a $101,000 vehicle that's going to cost you $36,000 and some taxes and things, which, you know, might be specific to you. $36,000 over 3 years. Can this lease company then sell that Rivian for $65,000 in 3 years' time? Or will this vehicle be hit, like so many vehicles have been hit, with this huge depreciation around EVs? Because let's face it, we were living in strange times where people were buying Teslas, driving them for a year, selling them for more than they bought them for. We saw hire companies. Look at Hertz. The CEO of Hertz just lost their job. I can't say that they were fired, but they have left their job because of this failed bet on EV residuals, which we saw coming because we knew supply and demand was rebalancing. And so, fascinating to think about. I think, you know, you would probably lose more than 36 grand on this vehicle if you owned it. Anyway, not recommending that you start leasing vehicles, but either way, thought I'd bring it up. Let's finish off, and I'm afraid once again EVs have been dragged into politics. The former President Trump over the weekend was talking about electric vehicles, and around that point in the conversation, on a speech at Dayton, Ohio, talked about the term bloodbath. Now, then went on to talk about electric vehicles, and in this speech he accused EVs of undermining Michigan and promoting EV sales was like an ordered hit job. Because of that, here's my point. Because of that, and I've given you all the context first, and you do with that what you will. Because of all of that, the actual bit that I found interesting, and not that I have a habit of sitting down and watching too many Trump speeches, but this was interesting because he also talked about EVs made in Mexico from companies owned by Chinese parent companies, and saying that if he's elected, he will implement a 100% tariff on vehicles made in Mexico if they have Chinese ownership. Comes alongside his previous promise of adding a 60% tariff on Chinese goods and Mexican-made goods as well. Not just EVs, Mexican-made goods, which some analysis says would be less good for the United States, but this isn't an economics podcast by any means. So, and you will understand, I'm sure, you will understand why that inflammatory language was picked up upon, and that's what the news cycle hit. But actually, what I found more interesting was there's a chance that depending on how November goes, these Chinese companies that are making big bets in Mexico to make their electric vehicles there and get them into the US, although they're all saying that's not the plan, we're making them for Mexico, I don't believe that for a minute. But either way, maybe I'm just cynical. That this would be a way of stopping that, and 100% tariffs on those vehicles, which nobody really picked up on because, yeah, for obvious reasons. Well, thank you so much for listening today and watching the podcast. Always amazing to read the comments and to have that conversation with you after the show. You can, if you want to, get the podcast, the audio version. It's free. There's a couple of ads in there sometimes, not always, depending on where you live and your IP address, but it really helps pay the bills for me. But really, I totally rely on the amazing Patreon legends who support this show. You can do that at patreon.com/EVNewsDaily. A daily mention for our premium partners, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from Nevo.ie and the Nevo EV Review Island YouTube channel. Derek's on fire right now. How does he get the time to review all these cars? Go check out the channel. Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map, and Lease Plan Electric Moments, all the tools and guidance EV drivers need. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.